Welcome to the Home Building Hero, where we help you become the hero of your new home by providing you all the information that you need. No matter if you're an industry pro, you're building, or you're buying, we got you covered here at the Home Building Hero. We're coming to you live today from the LP Studios here in Wisconsin. I'm your host, David Bellman, president of Bellman Homes. Thank you for tuning in today. I'm here today with Drake Holtree, the Western United States representative for Homes for Hope. Hey, Drake, welcome to the Home Building Hero. How are you?
Doing well, David. Thanks so much for having me.
Perfect. Well, thank you for joining the program. You're doing some really cool stuff. Just for the audience here, so you guys know, Drake spent 5 years working for ministries in the Dallas area, 2 years working in the Saharan African area, 1 year as a Hope International Fellow in Zimbabwe. So you've traveled all over the world. What did you do while you're there, and what inspired you to do this?
Yeah, so great question, David. I've really always had kind of a heart for overseas, wanted to see the world, want to experience it. I was one of those kids that wanted to do a gap year before college. And my mom was like, no, because if you go, I doubt you'll come back. So after college, moved to Zimbabwe, did what every parent wants their child to do, and took a unpaid fellowship halfway around the world. And so, while I was in Zimbabwe, I had the opportunity to be a communications fellow with Hope International. So basically, I would travel around and visit members of what we call savings groups that would save funds in a group of about 10 people, more or less, and then take out loans to use for their businesses, to pay school fees, whatever that looked like. So I had the opportunity to be there for a year, loved it, did some other traveling while I was in the area. But really enjoyed my time over there.
Yes, that's an interesting way to kind of to go, where, you know, most, you know, kids coming out of school kind of feel a pressure that they got to get into college or else take a full-time job right away. And, you know, it's a different route to take, but obviously very rewarding. Do you think it was more the travel, or do you think it was more the ability to help and give that really motivated you to do that?
I think it was a little bit of both. I always knew I wanted to serve in my career. And so with that, also had the affinity to be overseas. And so it was a great experience of another culture, kind of that cross-cultural experience. So yeah, it was very rewarding to serve. But what I love about the work of Hope is our clients have so much dignity and we value their dignity. So I really wasn't helping much. I was just kind of getting and gathering stories of what these men and women were doing themselves through these loans and being able to share that back with people in the States.
Interesting. So obviously you got connected with Homes for Hope, and that's where you work now. What does Homes for Hope do? What is your main mission and how does it work?
Yeah. So Homes for Hope is a building industry response to global poverty. We started 25 years ago, when Jeff Rutt, the founder, he's also the founder and CEO of Keystone Custom Homes in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. He wanted to help the men and women of Ukraine. His church was sending over containers of goods. And the local pastor in Ukraine kind of had to call up and have a tough conversation with Jeff and said, Jeff, we appreciate the goods so much, but the local businesses can't keep up with free. And your helping is really hurting. And when you think about that, imagine if someone is sending you free toothbrushes each year and free soccer balls and free towels. Why would you go to the local store toothbrushes or
sure.
soccer balls?
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. So, you know, you think you're doing something good, but then it's maybe hurting someone else or other segment of the economy.
Exactly. So that's when Jeff started to do some research and he was like, hey, what does it look like to really empower these men and women living in poverty and help them? And that's when he learned about microfinance. And so he did what he knew how to do best, and he built a home, and he went to his local trade partners and suppliers and cast vision for what he was doing. And from there asked for discounted and donated services to where he could send the loans overseas. And so 25 years later, that's what we do. We partner with the building industry to raise capital To then give to our parent organization, Hope International, and they run from the programmatic side. They're the ones that actually distribute the loans around the world, and we're
okay. Gotcha. So you worked countries. Originally for the Hope International, and then you kind of came over here locally, and then Homes for Hope basically does the charitable work here in the United States, and then passes it towards Hope International, which then distributes it to the areas of need. Is that kind of a fair statement?
I would say 100% fair, David.
Okay. Gotcha. I get how that works now. So is the primary source of their funding then the actual, you know, just donations from home builds, or are there other ways that people donate and get involved with this thing?
Yeah. So Hope International has regional reps all across the United States. And some people don't even know that the other sides exist. So Hope International has their regional reps that fundraise traditionally. And then Homes for Hope, we partner with the building industry specifically. And so we're kind of going at it with two different paths. Homes for Hope is really just a niche fundraising arm of Hope International.
Gotcha. Now, you'd mentioned in your comments, one of the first places that this organization began to help was in Ukraine. And obviously we know it's in the news a lot, the war is going on and things like that. How is that changed or affected what you guys are doing out there right now and the work that you guys are doing?
Yeah. So David, it has been a crazy year with everything going on in Ukraine. And first and foremost, we wanted to think about our staff there. In each country we work in, we have indigenous local staff there. And I believe we have about 65 in Ukrainian staff. And we wanted to make sure they were safe. So I would say all but six staff left Ukraine. They went to Romania, they went to Moldova. We have other partners there, and they got to safety. The six that stayed had a variety of different reasons to stay, but we are continuing to be in communication with all of them. Once we were able to kind of evaluate where we were at with our staff, that's when we started thinking about clients. First, obviously, we wanted to make sure they were safe. So we had our staff that had kind of moved around to other countries, contacting clients, communicating with them, making sure they were safe. And we paused all loan repayment. That was a big thing. Sure. They're focused on safety right now.
Yeah, exactly. They're probably not worried about that little loan or whatever. Well, it's probably a big loan to them, but they're probably not worried about that right now when, you know, bombshells are flying and troops
are keep waiting. The main thing, the main thing.
Yep, so absolutely.
We paused loan repayments. And then we really worked on partnering with churches in the area to provide aid. There is a time for development, but there's also a time just for aid, for resources.
Yep. Aid and keep yourself and your loved ones alive for sure. Now, has that increased donations to that area, or is it just kind of like, you know, everything's just been kind of on hold? Like, are you seeing people saying, hey, I want it to go specifically, you know, to the people of Ukraine because of what's going on?
Yeah. So when all this happened, we have a very large nonprofit partner that partners with us. And a lot of people were reaching out to them saying, how can we help Ukraine? How can we help Ukraine? How can we help Ukraine? And this organization said, hey, we actually don't work in Ukraine, but we know these people that have 25 years of experience in the Ukraine. And very generously pointed to our organization. And with that, there was definitely an increase in donations for the work in Ukraine, and it was appreciated. And we capped that.
That's nice to see, you know, like the collaboration where, you know, you have organizations that maybe collect money, but they're like, okay, we know we're not skilled at this or efficient at getting this money out. So you're, you know, better off to move it over, you know, to an organization like you guys, where you can actually, you have boots on the ground and you kind of understand the dynamic of the country and the operations there and the key people and all that kind of stuff. So that makes a lot of sense.
100%. We're all about rooting for rivals. There are great organizations doing things in the States and abroad, and we just want to cheer each other on.
So you kind of mentioned, obviously, there's other countries around the world that you also support. What are some of the other ones, the bigger ones that you guys get involved with and have programs for?
Yeah, so we are operating in over 20 countries around the world. We are in Paraguay, we are in Zimbabwe, we are in Zambia, we are in the Ukraine, we have partners with in Romania and Moldova. So there are just plenty of countries that we're in, and we're just kind of partnering with other organizations in as well. And so yeah, it's quite the laundry list. But
I know I gotta go on my globe now and like and see like where some of these places are, because been a while since I had my geography lessons, but that's impressive to have so many different places. And again, the program itself is, you basically give loans, is it to individuals or businesses, so that they can kind of get up and running and help their communities and help basically poverty in the area, correct? Is that kind of the general?
Yeah, great question. So what that looks like at the most basic level is people taking out these small loans. That could be someone in Zambia taking out a $5 loan. They sell produce at their home and they're like, hey, I'm not getting much foot traffic. I would like to get a stall in town at the local farmer's market, but it requires $5 to get that stall. And so they take out a $5 loan, they go into town, they rent out a stall, and then they get way more foot traffic. They're able to sell more produce and gain more capital, pay back the loan, and then they can use that money to invest in their business, send their kids to school, whatever it looks like to help break the cycle of poverty for them.
And I'm assuming does the money that comes from the United States, I mean, obviously that sounds like it goes pretty far, because I mean, obviously $5 just to get kind of this exposure obviously goes a long way. So I'm assuming it, the dollar travels pretty far that way as far as the impact.
100%. We have done some studies. Our team has looked into depth on it. I can't give you all the numbers, but basically $25 can serve someone for a year. And when you think about in these developing countries, typically families, it's not just a husband, wife, and their dog. It's typically about four members living in a home. So that $25 isn't really just impacting one person. It's impacting the whole family. And then you think about when businesses succeed, what do? You hire more staff. So it's really, this loan is not just impacting the person taking out the loan, but it's impacting their family, their staff, and their community.
Okay, that makes good sense. So, I mean, what's a typical time frame then that some of these loans get repaid?
Yeah, so that is a great question. I actually had to dig into that a little bit myself and talk to our microfinance team. I was like, I'm curious. And typically it's about 4 to 6 months.
Oh, that's not very long though.
Yeah. So, cause these aren't huge loans. We do in some of the countries that we've been around in longer, like the Ukraine, we have small and medium enterprise loans, which can get pretty bigger. A majority of our clients in the Ukraine are farmers. And so think about, they're using a loan for farm equipment and things like that. So that could get pretty big, say $3,000, $4,000, or $5,000. That takes significantly longer to pay back. It's more like the 12 to 24 month range, but that is not a majority of our clients. The majority are smaller loans, 4 to 6 month repayment cycle.
So obviously like something like this, I'm assuming there's gotta be a benefit locally as well to supporting some of these countries. Can you talk about that a little bit and how maybe it, the halo effect of how maybe it comes back and benefits people here in the United States and around the country here?
Yeah, I think the opportunities when we meet with builders and those in the building industry, obviously the default is, well, why not local? Why not local? And as I alluded to earlier, the concept of rooting for rivals and cheering on other organizations, we say, hey, why not both? There's a great opportunity to do things locally where a builder is building in their community, but there is just as much of an opportunity to do things overseas. And as you kind of mentioned earlier, the value is really there. Your dollar can go further. You are giving people a hand up rather than a hand out. And there's a lot of
heard that phrase before. We use that in Operation Finally Home all the time.
I love it. Yeah, I love it. That's great.
A popular phrase, but no, it's good because you want to make sure that the money is being used in a positive way and not just, hey, somebody's just going to take this money and, you know, run off with it. It's actually transforming their life in some way and getting them on a better path.
Yeah, 100%.
Love it. So can both builders and consumers get involved with something like this? How does that work? Yeah.
So traditionally, we have partnered with builders, and that was kind of our history. That's how Jeff Rutt started things with Keystone Custom Homes. But we've, in the coming years, tried to branch out to work with builders, suppliers, trade partners, different organizations. We were actually doing a ribbon cutting on a home in Florida, and there was a gentleman there that power washes the homes when they're done to make them clean for the clients that are moving in. And when he heard our average loan size was about $300, he charges $250 per home to power wash.
Sure.
And so he heard all this and he was like, you know what? I'm going to power wash this house for free. And then he pulled out his checkbook and wrote a check for $50 and handed it to us. And so there's definitely, we get creative on what it looks like to partner.
Sure. Okay. I love it. Anything else that, you know, you think is noteworthy about what you guys are doing, or something maybe that I didn't ask you that's worth noting about the organization?
Yeah, I would love to share a client story. Sure. If I may.
Yeah, that'd be phenomenal.
So during my time in Zimbabwe, I had the pleasure of going down to Bulawayo, which is the second largest city in Zimbabwe. And I met these two ladies. They were neighbors. Their names were Essie and Abigail. And Essie and Abigail couldn't afford to send their kids to school. They couldn't afford school fees. And honestly, without education, we know education is a huge part of just getting out of the poverty cycle and things along those lines. And so they took out a loan from Hope, and they bought two electric Jeeps and a cotton candy machine. And with that, they would charge 10 cents to their local neighbors for some cotton candy and 25 cents for their kids to ride around in the little Jeep for a little bit. And they affectionately referred to themselves as the Disney World of Zimbabwe. Now, I don't know if there's some copyright issues there or anything.
Probably, but I don't think Disney's going after that.
Exactly. As a guy in Dallas, Texas, I would have never in a million years thought, wow, a cotton candy machine and two electric Jeeps are going to be what helps break the cycle of poverty for these women and their children. And with that, they were able to raise the funds to not only buy uniforms, but to also send their kids to school. And so it was just a great example of the clients that we work with are creative.
That's a great story. I mean, that's a lot of fun. And I'm sure they had fun doing it as well. And, you know, just to bring not only, you know, bring income into them, but then the joy that they brought in their community, just to give them an experience that they probably never had before. That's pretty amazing. So
yeah, exactly.
Cool stuff. So if someone wanted to learn more about your organization or reach out to you to assist, how would they find you?
Yeah, they can either go to homesforhope.org, and that's the number 4, homesforhope.org. They can email me at dholtry@homesforhope.org, or they can find me on LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. Well, what I'm going to do is I'll put a couple of those things in the show notes as well. That way, if you're listening and you want to connect directly, you can find that information, or if you're in the car. It's always hard to remember all those things. So we'll put that in there and the proper spelling and everything so you guys can find it. And then once again, thank you so much, Drake Holtry from Homes for Hope, for joining the Home Building Hero today.
Thanks, David. Pleasure was all mine.
Once again, thank you for tuning in to the Home Building Hero, broadcasting live from the Bellman Home Studio. If you haven't already, please make sure to give us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, and make sure to hit that subscribe button so you don't miss any future content. Until next time, I'm David Bellman, signing off.